My dearly beloved brothers and sisters, we left David yesterday in that state of mind where he was soon to have to leave the ecclesia. He was doing so much good, and yet there seemed no way in which he could stay. And we wish to pick up the record at that point back in 1 Samuel 18, because there we find David, no matter what Saul does to him, he seems loved by everybody who sees his example, no matter who. And so we read those words, didn't we, about Saul's servants loving him, about Israel loving him, about Judah loving him, about Michael loving him, even the Philistines loving David. And we remember the words of the Lord when the servants of the high priest returned to them and they said, "Well, where is he?" "Well, never man spake like this man." So was the example that David gave. Look at 1 Samuel 18 and verse 16. "All Israel and Judah loved David." Verse 20, "Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David." Verse 22, towards the end of it, "For he knows that his servants love thee." And then verse 28, "Saul saw and knew that Yahweh was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him." And the name in verse 30 was precious to the Philistines also. And yet we have to pause for thought for a moment. Let's enter into David's shoes. He was leading out the army and bringing them back. He was being sung about by the women. He was loved by everyone. He was giving for their needs. He was providing exhortation for his brothers and sisters. But he was a young man. This was new to him, and he had needs himself. And giving and giving and giving cannot continue unless you stop and take in yourself. You can't stand on the platform all the time and speak. You must sit and listen too. You must be able to receive the word and exhortation and comfort yourself, as well as provide it to others. And so David had needs, especially as a young person facing difficulty in ecclesial life. So where does he turn in time of need? After all, that's the title of this session, finding that comfort. Where was David going to turn? And the record shows us that in fact there were just three places that he turned. And the first one was to God. Turn, if you would, to David's mind in the Psalms. Firstly, Psalm 12. And here we see the position that David was in. He seemed in a wonderful, strong position to all that saw him. A rock. Such a firmness in the ecclesia. One who even the older men of war, no doubt, followed in example. But here's David's mind. Psalm 12, verse 1. "Help, Yahweh, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men." Where can I turn, says David, to find someone who can help me? Turn to Psalm 86, if you would. Another of these psalms that David wrote. Psalm 86 and again at verse 1. Here is the opening salutation. Here is the mind of David expressed most vividly as he opens his prayer to God. Psalm 86. "Bow down thine ear, O Yahweh, hear me, for I am poor. I'm needy," says David. "I'm in need of help." Verse 6. "Give ear, O Yahweh, unto my prayer. Attend to the voice of my supplication. In the day of my trouble I will call upon thee, for thou wilt answer me." Verse 13. "Great is thy mercy toward me, For thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest grave. O God, the proud are risen against me. The assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul, and have not set thee before them. But thou, O Yahweh, art a God full of compassion, gracious, long-suffering, plenteous in mercy and truth. O turn unto me, says David. Have mercy upon me. Here's David's distress. Give thy strength unto thy servant. Save the son of thine handmaid. Show me a token for good, that they which hate me may see it and be ashamed. Because thou, Yahweh, hast holpen me and comforted me. Here is the comfort of God upon David. And when he cried, show them a token, he said. And surely the answer is there in 1 Samuel 18. Because Saul saw and knew that Yahweh was with him. That token was evidently manifest through the life of David, that God was with him and helping him. But that didn't stop David crying unto God in prayer. That didn't stop him needing God's help. Perhaps we'll turn to one more psalm, Psalm 143. Another psalm of this time, we believe. Here is David's prayer to God. Verse 3. He says, the enemy has persecuted my soul. He has smitten my life down to the ground. He hath made me to dwell in darkness, as those that have been long dead. Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is desolate, he says. Verse 7. Hear me speedily, O Yahweh, my spirit faileth. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down into the pit. And so here is David's despair before his God. But after he turns to God, who else can David turn to? Who physically was there that could provide for David? The Proverbs tell us to make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. So David knew that he could not turn to many in Israel to help him. In fact, when he's in the cave with his 400 men, he despairs because there was no one to comfort him there. We might be in need of comforters ourselves. We might be in need of being a comforter to someone else within the ecclesia. And when we have trials or we see another in trial, it may be that we are the one that they turn to for help, or that we need someone to help us. Just turn back, if you would, to Psalm 119, because there David talks about his trials in adversity, picking up from our theme from yesterday, Psalm 119 and the 71st verse. David says there, and we believe that this is sometime during these trials that were coming upon him at this time. And he says, verse 71, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. It is good for me. That's something that the Apostle Paul echoes, isn't it, in the New Testament. It's good for us to suffer trial. It's been good for me, says David, to have been afflicted. That word afflicted is first used when Abraham's told in Genesis 15, verse 13, that Israel would go into Egypt and that they were going to suffer trial and tribulation, that God might bring them out from that place. And if we turn to Ecclesiastes and chapter 1, David's own son picks up on this very term in Ecclesiastes 1, and it's the term exercised. And we remember, do we not, the words in Hebrews 12 yesterday, that chastening, says the apostle, yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. And this word affliction is here in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 13. The preacher says, I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised, to be afflicted therewith. And chapter 3 and verse 10. Where he says there's a time for everything. And then verse 10. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be afflicted, to be exercised by it. David said, God has given me trial. God has caused me to have great conflicts in life that I might learn from it. And David, in that exercise of that affliction, needed help. He couldn't do it alone. He needed his brothers and sisters. He needed someone who was going to be able to provide for his needs. And everyone was telling him, you've got to flee. You've got to run away from Gibeah. You've got to be on your own. And that's not what David wanted. What was he to do? What was the scriptural example that he might follow? We know, of course, in Matthew 10 that Jesus says that when they persecute you, when you're preaching the truth, he says, flee you to another city. Flee ye into another, he says. And if we just look at the slide, in fact, David would have known that there are scriptural examples that he would no doubt have thought about. Isaac moved away from the Philistines in Genesis 26. And Genesis 27, Jacob fled before his brother Esau. And so there is a time when conflict becomes too difficult and we must move on. But Scripture also teaches us to stand still and see the salvation of God. Scripture teaches us not to act rashly. It teaches us not to move just because our pride has been hurt, and so we hop to the next ecclesia because we don't want to sort out our issues. So when is the time to go? And when's the time to stay? What was David's example? Well, turn, if you would, to Psalm 11, because in Psalm 11, we find, in fact, that he records the advice he was giving at this very time in 1 Samuel 18 and through into 1 Samuel 19. He says, this is a psalm of David, Psalm 11 and verse 1. He says, in Yahweh put I my trust. How say ye to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? And we believe that these first few verses are in fact the advice from those who were seeking to help David, who were on his side. David, don't put up with it. Look at what Saul's trying to do to you. You've got to get away. You've got to flee. Verse 2, they say that the wicked, lo, the wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow upon the string, that they may privily shoot at the upright in heart. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? David, you've got to go. The truth has been lost in Gibeah. Their bow is ready. That arrow is pointed at your heart, David. Every trial and every snare will come closer to catching you out. And one of these days, David, you're going to be caught. And that's going to be the end of you. Get going. Flee. Well, what is the response of David? Well, he gives us the principle in verse 4. He says, Yahweh is in his holy temple. Yahweh's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. He says, don't worry, God is watching. God has brought these trials and afflictions, and God knows. And I go in prayer to God, so don't worry about me. And then we find in verse 5, here is the solution that David presents. Yahweh trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. Upon the wicked God shall rain snares, fire, brimstone, and horrible tempest. This shall be their portion, or their cup. For the righteous, Yahweh loveth righteousness. His countenance doth behold the upright. So he says, look, God is going to look after me. I know this for sure. And I know that the wicked will have their portion at the end of the day, whatever it might be. And I've got to be patient in this regard, says David. Well, that could not continue. And in the end, David had to flee. And back in the record in 1 Samuel 19, we find that this occasion comes along. David has tried his best to stay. He had resisted the advice to go. And now there is but no choice. 1 Samuel 19 and verse 1 says that Saul spake to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. It's no longer trying to catch him out with the Philistines. It's no longer trying to trick him. This is now all out war against David. Here is a brother that we must discredit. We must destroy this brother, says Saul to everybody that would listen to him. And so we find in verse 10 that Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. David runs away finally. Where's he go? Does he run and say, right, I'm emigrating to the other side of the world. I've had enough. I'm off. Does he run as far as he can that night? He runs to his house. He flees just to his own house. He doesn't want to leave the ecclesia. Look at the record telling us, here's David wanting to stay where he could do so much good. But it was an awful situation. Verse 14. Saul sent messengers to take David, and Michael said, he's sick. And Saul sent the messengers again to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may slay him. Or Saul's hatred has taken another turn. Look, if you would, at Psalm 59, which is where David records his mind at this time. And we see not only the despair of David in this psalm, but also his great relief at being delivered from that house. Psalm 59 and verse 15. He says there, let them wander. This is those, perhaps we're going at verse 14. At the evening, let them return. Let them make a noise like a dog and go round about the city. Here were these men outside his very house. Let them wander, he says, up and down for meat and grudge if they be not satisfied. But, he says, I will sing of thy power. Yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning. For thou hast been my defence and refuge in the day of my trouble. Unto thee, O my strength, will I sing, for God is my defence and the God of my mercy. And we believe by the time of verse 16, David is now out in the field. The dawn is coming. He has fled his house. His wife has let him down by a cord through the window. How reminiscent of the times that David would have remembered from Jericho. And so here he is. He's free. But he's not where he wanted to be. He's relieved that those who were trying to kill him are not there outside his door anymore. And in fact, this psalm of David's deliverance from his own house was later used by Israel's national worship to commemorate deliverance from Egypt at Passover time. There is a generation, says the Proverbs, chapter 30, verse 14, whose teeth are as swords, their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor off the earth and the needy from among men. And it's no wonder that there's relief in David's words when he's away from that situation. He could only take it for so long. And so David flees. We will never be in a position where we are persecuted to the death in the way that David was persecuted. But no doubt we can sympathize with those who are in difficult situations. We can feel for those who are in troubled times in ecclesial life. And so David now is fleeing. Where's he going to go? Who's he going to find that will help him in this time of need? Well, 1 Samuel 19 again, and the narrative tells us that he flees to Samuel. Here is his first stop. Here is one of two men upon earth at this time that David feels he can go to. And just feel the passion in the words. 1 Samuel 19, verse 18. So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel to Ramah and told him all. David told Samuel everything. David told Samuel what was in his heart. We need a friend that we can trust above all things. We need someone who will provide for us a listening ear. We need someone who will provide sound scriptural advice. And we need all three in the same person. There's no good having someone who is very good at listening, but then tells us that the best thing we can do is leave the truth. It's no good having someone who can give us very sound advice, but actually never listened to a word we said. And we never felt that they really heard what our situation really was. And in Samuel, and secondly in Jonathan, David will find someone who can do all of those things for him. And what does David do when he gets to Samuel? Does he sit and mope? Does he feel so exhausted from the depression and the nervous breakdown that he can do nothing and just needs to rest and take it easy? Well, we believe what Samuel did for David was say, right, let's work. Let's get you down to the Bible study. Let's get you doing work that will prepare you for being the king. And David was to work, we believe, non-stop with Samuel. In fact, this is the only time we believe that David was alone with Samuel at the school of the prophets. And that's where he takes him. He takes him there to a Bible school type environment. And he says, right, we're going to work. And we know that David and Samuel together prepared for the kingdom. That's many of the things which Solomon actually put into practice. And this is the time he's doing it. They're working together. And we need someone like Samuel, do we not? If we're a young brother, then we need to find an older brother who can teach us and instruct us. If we're an older brother, then perhaps it is that we might have a young brother come to us who is in need of our guidance and help. If we are a younger sister, then we will need to go to an older sister who can truly provide an example of what keepers at home really means. If we're an older sister, we may well find a young sister in need of help that we can provide advice for. And so they go to Naoth, says verse 18 of 1 Samuel 19. And it's there, which that word means a residence or a dwelling place of learning. And that's where the school of the prophets was. And so David now is in this environment keeping busy. And what do they do? Well, come back, if you would, to Deuteronomy 17, because we made allusion to this yesterday, but perhaps we'll turn to it today. Deuteronomy 17 records for us this occasion that we're speaking of now. Prophetically, we have these things recorded. In Deuteronomy 17 and verse 14, it says that when thou art come unto the land which Yahweh thy God giveth thee, well, that was the days of Joshua, wasn't it? And shalt possess it, well, that's the days of the judges, isn't it? And shalt dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me. That's the days of Samuel, isn't it? So here is the context now of these words that follow. It's the time in which they ask for a king. And just picking up the words of verse 18. It shall be, when he that's your king sitteth upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book out of that which is before the priest, the Levite. So the king himself had to physically pick up a pen and write down the words of scripture. And we know, of course, that when we write something, and when we read it, and when we hear it aloud, it goes into our brains much better than if someone else just tells us about it. And verse 19 says that, it shall be, this is this book, this Bible shall be with this king, and he shall read therein all the days of his life. Here is the principle of daily Bible readings, that he, the king, may learn to fear Yahweh his God, to keep the words of this law and to do them. Learn, keep, and do. Without his Bible, this king will never be able to do those three things. And we're the same. We must learn, keep, and do the principles of truth. And here is David, we believe, with Samuel, writing out his own Bible. Writing out that law that he loved. That was his meditation all the day. And if we were to turn to 1 Chronicles and to chapter 9 and verse 22, we'd find that it records there the establishment of the details of kingship. It's in fact a book that Samuel wrote, that David extended. And in fact, Solomon later extended even further. Because you see, Samuel had a work to do. And that work involved a number of different things. And 1 Samuel 10 tells us that Samuel's work was to anoint and counsel kings. This was something that Samuel had to do. He had to tell the king the manner of the kingdom. He had to take these words from Deuteronomy 17 and put them into practice with the king. He wrote this national constitution for use by kings as God had commanded him. And that's recorded for us in the book of Samuel. What else did Samuel do? Well, he organized the maintenance of the house of God by war spoils, a principle that David himself continued, as did some of the kings that followed after him. Samuel revitalized the celebration of the national feasts. His Passover was to be the benchmark for all future commemorations of the Passover. Samuel compiled a history of the times, and we're blessed with being able to read that. He established the schools of the prophets that continued for many years that followed after that. And with David, at this time, in 1 Samuel 19, he planned and appointed the order of worship in the house of God, which was, And Samuel and David full well knew this, which was typical of the kingdom which we wait for. And they did that together at this time. David did not sit and mope. David did not have time probably to do anything else than to do Bible study. And with someone like Samuel, the aged prophet, time was precious. And it's no different today, brothers and sisters. Time with older, wiser brothers and sisters is precious time, because they won't always be there. Or the opportunity to sit with them will not always present itself. The opportunity to learn from others is one that we should never leave until tomorrow. Well, David had to flee from Samuel, and so now he goes to Jonathan. Jonathan is where he will turn next, this brother who was to teach him many principles. In fact, many of the characteristics that we find in Jonathan, and some from Samuel, we find manifest in David in later life. David learned great respect for Saul because of Jonathan. Jonathan showed tremendous respect to his father. He was faithful to Saul to the end, but he was also faithful to David. And there is a wonderful lesson for us. Here is a brother in the ecclesia trying to cause trouble for another brother. And we fully support that poor brother who's being victimized. But we need to also be there for our other brother too. And Jonathan showed that balance of goodness and truth. And he showed that because he was exercised by trial between his best friend that he loved and his father that he loved and respected. And so back in 1 Samuel and through into chapter 20, we read in verse 1. And David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan. He leaves Samuel and he goes to Jonathan. Here's David's need. What have I done, he says to Jonathan. What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life? And he said unto him, God forbid that thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. So David runs to Jonathan. He says, your father's trying to kill me. And Jonathan doesn't say, yes, he's a terrible father. He's a wicked man. He's an awful brother. Not so. Jonathan shows respect. And so we find that Jonathan firstly listens to David. And so we find in verse 3 that David sware moreover and said. And so we read here the words of David, just like with Samuel, pouring out his heart, telling him everything. So he does so with Jonathan. And he ends that verse, he says, as thy soul, Jonathan, liveth, there is but a step between me and death. And Jonathan quietly listens. And then verse 4, then says Jonathan to David, whatsoever thy soul desires, I will even do it for thee. David, what's your need? I can see you're in distress. How can I help? Anything you ask me. But in fact, what happens is that Jonathan helps David to formulate a plan. David says, right, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, we've got to do the other. And Jonathan says, now, okay, let's calm down. Let's work out what's best. Let's follow a scriptural example. And so verse 10, then said David to Jonathan, who shall tell me? Or what if thy father answer thee roughly? And again, Jonathan's reply, okay, well, this is the plan. Let's keep calm. Let's think clearly. And the third thing that Jonathan does is he gives an oath to David. He shows he will be absolutely loyal to him. He shows that he can be trustworthy. There's nothing worse than pouring out your heart to someone who is then going to go and betray you. You then find out you can't trust them, and you feel then even more alone than if you'd never gone to them in the first place. And here is David with Jonathan saying, well, you know, David, you're going to be the king. And I tell you what, I'd like to be next to you, but lower down. And so we find verse 16, where we read, so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let Yahweh even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And Jonathan caused David to swear again, because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And so there is that great love that is demonstrated. And then fourthly, Jonathan says to him, well, you know, God will provide providential care over you. God is in control. And so we find that plan about the lad firing the arrows. And then verse 22, but if I say thus unto the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond thee. Go thy way, for Yahweh hath sent thee away. This is our plan, David. But God will oversee it, because we're doing the right thing. And Jonathan's self-sacrificing love and kindness was exactly what David needed. A love that was shown to him. And so what do we find of Jonathan's example? Well, he showed great patience, did he not? He showed love, understanding. Perhaps we'll turn to the Proverbs. Proverbs 17. We find so many words in the Proverbs that could really have been written about David and Jonathan, and in fact many others in this record about David's life. And Proverbs 17, we read in verse 17. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And that's Jonathan, isn't it? Jonathan had declared his love for David after having seen God reveal David to him on the slopes of Elah. And Jonathan's love grew stronger and stronger the more time he spent with David. Jonathan had recognized instantly this one that God had promised, and he showed him this great love. Look at chapter 18 and verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. And there again we find Jonathan, who is sticking so close to David, providing for his needs. He is a young teenager, and Jonathan is already much older. He is a man who has already demonstrated in his own exploits that God would preserve him in battle if only he put his trust in him. And now he imparts that same to David. And so in the face of anger from his father, and violence even, and deceit from his father, Jonathan shows example of how to treat the one who was doing these things to him. He taught great respect. In Ephesians, we're told, be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. That is the principle. But David in the Psalms tells us the solution. Stand in awe, says Psalm 4 and verse 4, and sin not. So just hold on, says David, and don't sin. And then what's he say? Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still, Selah. If someone offends you, if someone upsets you, if someone says something roughly, go away, says David, and talk to yourself. Mull it over and think of scriptural examples and be still and ponder upon it. And then it might be right to say a word back to help your brother, or it might be right to forgive and to forget. And so we find David in this wonderful situation of having such a brother to help him out. And they met just one more time. 1 Samuel 26 is the time that they met just once again. And we read there in 1 Samuel 23 and verse 16. Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. Saul was looking everywhere for David by this time, and Jonathan goes straight to him and he strengthens his hand. Isn't that like the Lord Jesus, who has sent an angel to strengthen him? Well, Jonathan is this angel to David. In fact, Jonathan's example is one that is very much present in the life of the Lord Jesus. We might say that as Judas was to Jesus, so Saul was to Jesus. But as John was to Jesus, so Jonathan and Samuel perhaps were to David. Because John was the disciple that Jesus loved, the one that he had there to comfort him. And so how do we summarize? How do we draw our thoughts to a close? David would be blessed to find wonderful counselors in future days, because now he no longer had Samuel or Jonathan. He would have counselors such as Hushai, Ahithophel, Nathan and others. And David would be betrayed by at least one of them. But such are God's trials upon us. Can we be a Samuel or Jonathan for those in need? Or do we feel that we're just a David in need of help, able only to receive and not to give? We must work in the ecclesia, in whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, and whatever trials that arise. It is all too easy to move ecclesia at the first sign of trouble, or when our pride has been hurt. But we will never learn the lesson intended, and we will receive the trial once more. We must take care in having too long a period away from our own ecclesia, not being able to work in ecclesial life, perhaps through frequent travels, perhaps intentional, fleeing from troubles or ecclesial responsibility. We need to try and help all our brothers and sisters. We need to care for one another, to exercise right choice in the friends that we make. A blessed thing it is for any man or woman to have a friend, one human soul whom we can trust utterly, who knows the best and worst of us, and who loves us in spite of our faults. We must remember to talk often, to confide, to share problems, knowing that a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chiefest friends. May it be that we can be comforters to one another, and that we may be comforted by each other, that we may find friendships that give us hope in these evil days and provide us with the strength to hold fast, and that the friendships we make at places like this Bible school will be eternal, continuing in immortality and incorruptibility, that the mortal population may look at us and see a friendship like that of David and Samuel, or David and Jonathan, whose love and friendship was wonderful.